First, it seems like we all know that one person, you know, the type, the one who will do and say anything to get ahead, even if it means kissing the boots of the boss. Like it or not, there are sycophants, better known as suck-ups, all around us. And while many of us like to grumble about it, it's a behavior that's been around for a long time. Our next guest wanted to take a closer look at this, why we do it, why it angers us, and why it maybe works sometimes. In a new book, he shares what he found, as well as plenty of examples of sucking up throughout human history. Mark Parker joins us now. He's a professor of English at James Madison University and co-author with Deborah Parker of the new book, Sucking Up, A Brief Consideration of Sycophancy. Mark, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
Let's start by having you give us a good definition, a working definition of sycophancy. What do we mean by that?
It's using deceptive practices to get something out of someone else by sort of making them feel better about themselves or making them feel about the world in ways that aren't particularly true.
Well, you're clearly a person of taste and refinement, Mark, so I'm sure you're going to give us a good interview today. No, but seriously, what is it that got you and your co-author interested in this topic? It's a little off the beaten path.
It sure is. We started working on it about 3 years ago, and we were at a dinner party, and people started talking about people they knew around them who were sucking up. And the stories were really interesting, and as people tend to do, one sort of led to another, and everyone tried to outvie each other with their greatest and most unbelievable sycophant. And after a while, we were all feeling a little bit, sort of amused and also appalled at the same time. But afterwards, my wife and I were talking about it, and we thought we really ought to think a little bit about such an interesting social phenomenon, because it's not at all obvious exactly why it works so well, and it's also not obvious how pervasive it is.
One thing it is not, Mark, as I learned from your book, is new. This is going back. People have been complaining about flatterers for thousands of years. Can you talk about some of the earliest examples of people complaining about this?
Well, it goes back. The first use of the word is from a Greek play by called Wealth, in which there's a character called Sycophantes, which is basically where the word comes from, sycophant. And that's a character who basically is kind of like an opportunistic ambulance chaser who finds sort of people who are breaking the law and turns them in. And it's a sort of an odd sort of beginning for the word, but it does get some of the deception and perhaps the malice. It brings that out about the term.
And this we can find in a lot of different environments, the corporation, politics, everywhere. There's not really a place where there isn't some example of this, is there?
No, it seems to be all places and all times. Our book didn't really deal across cultures. There was plenty within our own, within the sort of European and English-speaking cultures to look at. But it does seem to be pretty pervasive.
And another thing that seems to be common is people hope that the sycophant, the flatterer, gets what's coming to them. Even Dante in the Inferno, the flatterers end up in a particularly bad place in the afterlife, right?
Yeah, that was a very interesting place to start to think about flattery, because whenever my wife teaches Italian, and she does Dante very often, and whenever she teaches it or whenever I taught that book, our students are always stunned that flatterers are actually lower in hell than murderers and some tyrants, and it just seems counterintuitive to them. But Dante is very clear about why he puts them lower down than someone who takes someone's life. He thinks that it's a sin against community that makes it impossible to have a working community, and so he considers fraud like this to be much worse than murder. Fraud never has an end. It has a kind of an effect on the cultural fabric, that is worse, he thinks, in some terms, than just a simple murder.
I don't know if you're on the same page as Dante, but can you talk about the damage that you see sycophancy sucking up doing in modern life?
Well, again and again, in modern life, I think one of the differences is people used to call this out, and people used to say very clearly that this was a moral failure. I think that people tend to view it now as somewhat more transactional. It's something that they begin, they enter into, they do it for a purpose, they think, a limited purpose, and then they think that they exit from it pretty free from any kind of opprobrium or any kind of real ethical lapse. I think there's a certain commodification, I think, that's come to sucking up now.
We're talking to Mark Parker. He's co-author of the new book, Sucking Up, A Brief Consideration of Sycophancy. And Mark, you mentioned the origin of the word sycophant. And then there are phrases like sucking up, lickspittle, brown noser. They're all kind of gross and kind of biological. What's up with that?
It has always been associated. The act of sycophancy has almost always been associated with excrement. It's sort of a. There are many stories which turn on this kind of excremental vision, and I think that gets the kind of a couple of essential senses across from the older and traditional way of thinking about sycophancy. There's a sense in which it's something that sticks. You don't simply walk away from it sort of clean. That there's a kind of a smearing that you're doing to this yourself as well as to the world.
And you give multiple examples from Europe to an ancient Chinese emperor, where a person will. There'll be a person in power, they pass gas, or they moon somebody, and then the sycophant, their follower, basically waxes rhapsodic and tells glorious verses about the wonder of the anatomy or smell in question.
That's right. It's sort of some of these stories are clearly maybe more or less reliable, but they do turn on this idea that there's something spectacular about the act when people talk about it, and then it's easily turned into a kind of anecdote which turns on excrement and turns on abasement. It's sort of a kind of a can you believe this story, at least when people tell it over and over again.
And Mark, I assume everybody thinks we're smart enough to know if somebody's doing this to us, flattering us to get their way. We're all so smart, we're going to spot that. Obviously not, though, right? Because this works?
It does work. One of the things that I was perhaps, I mentioned that we're amused and appalled by this when we see examples of it, but one of the things that I was appalled by when we were preparing this book was we looked through some of the literature from psychology about it, and it's pretty clear. They concur that it works. There's a sense in which we're very vulnerable to this kind of activity, and we tend to overlook it. There's a kind of a need that people have, and people are great enablers of sycophants. That's the other half of this equation. It's not just the sycophant, it's also the person who draws it out and surrounds themselves with sycophants that is really at fault here. It works.
For someone in a position of power, and that seems to be a key element in this, but say you're a boss and you're thinking, I don't want to do this. I don't want to be fooled by somebody just flattering me just to get what they want. Are there signs? Are there ways we can try to spot this?
Interestingly enough, Plutarch, the sort of Roman Greek writer from many centuries ago, has a wonderful little essay about how to tell a flatterer from a friend. And those are the two terms that really loom large here. A friend is someone who wants good things for you and who wants you also to be a good person and who may say unpleasant things to you. A flatterer is someone who won't do either, who doesn't wish you any good and will certainly not try to turn you towards good things. What Plutarch sort of suggests is that someone who is trying to test whether someone's a flatterer or a friend is to change one's mind and see if the flatterer will always go along, and to see if, just to be very mindful, and to see if the flatterer actually will suggest that they cut corners morally or ethically or do things that are beneath them. There are some ways to figure this out, but one of the more difficult things about sycophancy and flattery generally is it turns on intention. The same act almost can, well, there are extremes, of course, that don't sort of admit of any sort of doubt, but the same act sometimes can be seen as flattery or as just friendship and well-wishing.
And it seems like it'll be pretty basic to human psychology. If somebody's saying nice things about me, I'll probably want to hear that and not question the motivation behind it, because I like hearing nice things about me.
It certainly is. And I think one of the reasons there are so many anecdotes and they're so well worked up and the sort of tradition of thinking about flattery is so well developed is that it is such a danger. And it can sort of slip by people before they actually know what's happening.
We're talking right now with Mark Parker. He's co-author of the new book, Sucking Up, A Brief Consideration of Sycophancy. We're looking at the behavior often known as sucking up, why we do it, why we can't stand it when other people do it, and whether or not it works. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Have you seen this maybe at your workplace? What's the most egregious example of sucking up that you've seen? Have you be honest, done it yourself? If you're a boss, how do you sort it out, whether people are doing that to you? Does it work? Call in now at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also email ideas at WPR.org or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. We'll pick up the conversation coming up on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We're picking up our conversation now with Mark Parker. He's a professor of English at James Madison University, and he's co-author of the new book, Sucking Up, A Brief Consideration of Sycophancy. And you can join in at 800-642-1234. Have you seen this kind of sycophantic behavior, brown-nosing people call it, play out at your workplace or elsewhere in your life, in the American public in general? Do you think that when people do this, they get what they want? Is it possible to spot this? Have you fallen prey to it if you've been on the other end of this? And what questions do you have about it? Call in now at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can email ideas at WPR.org or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. And Mark, in researching and writing this book, are you spotting sycophancy everywhere you look, more so now that you've got your radar turned on?
Well, I have to say a lot of times that when I see things, I hang fire a bit because it's so easy to mistake it, and it's so hard to sort of put your finger on it sometimes. You really have to sort of not jump to a conclusion about one thing or another unless it's really, really obvious.
Let's go to our callers now. Gail is on the line in Fish Creek. Gail, hi.
Oh, hi. Oh, this takes me way back to my corporate days, too. We had so many and such a variety of them. But my question is, we had a schmoozer. He was so good at it. And the schmoozer isn't necessarily a suck-up, but he sure gets his way a lot.
Mm-hmm.
So where would you categorize the schmoozer?
The schmoozer versus the suck-up. Gail, thanks. What do you think, Mark?
I would put that in there with this larger sort of spectrum of ingratiation, because that's certainly, you're making people feel better about themselves. And if you're doing it, again, to deceive, that's a different thing. If you're making people feel better about themselves because you like them and are polite, that's one thing. But if you're really using it as a means to an end, I think you've crossed a line. And that's what's very difficult about this behavior, is that it can be very difficult to see what someone's intention is with a given behavior.
If I'm doing it, do I know what my intention is? Am I conscious that I'm intentionally manipulating people, or is this just kind of how I am?
What the research in psychology shows pretty clearly, and certainly a lot of literary texts, is that people do not understand it when they're doing it, and they tend to basically build up a kind of target figure, a person whom they're sucking up to, who is far better than the one that they see in real life. They kind of imagine a better person, and that justifies this humiliating behavior to themselves.
And how do I know if I'm, you know, just in a meeting and wanting to be part of the team? Yeah, boss, it's a good idea. I don't know. I haven't really thought about it, but sure, why not?
I think that is always a kind of a gray area. I think you'd go back to Plutarch and say, you think about intent, but of course you can't really know that. But you also think about just pervasiveness. Is it your habitual response, or is there really some thought behind it? I think one of the things that I came away with after doing this kind of research was that it really is worth slowing down and being a little more mindful about your activities within a culture. I think all of us want in society to be polite and to be kind and to be helpful. And all of us want other things with our careers. And we have to be very careful not to mix those two very different sort of goals.
Gail, thanks for calling in. Back to your calls now at 800-642-1234. Jerry is on the line in Glendale. Jerry, hi.
Oh, hi. Thanks for taking my call. I just wanted to point out that the term sucking up can be used in a very disparaging and manipulative way. I was in a position for a couple of years. A new director was hired. There was a lot of angst about the new director. People didn't want to go along with the policies. I took a look at them, made a pragmatic decision to support the initiatives, and the reaction of the other disgruntled employees was to basically label me as somebody who was sucking up to the boss, which was really not the case at all.
Jerry, thanks for that. That accusation of being a suck-up, Mark.
Yeah, that I think that just turns on the sort of real ambiguities of this activity. It can be weaponized as a kind of a way of actually attacking people whom you don't like. I think it's perfectly possible that goes on. And I think it's very common to do that.
Jerry, thanks for the call. Go next to Randy on the line in Ripon. Randy, hi.
Hi. I can't help wonder if some of this starts in, like, middle school or high school. But in myself, having been a foreman or supervisor, I've had people try to do that with me, which kind of left me feeling, like, not very respectful. You know, I didn't take advantage of it, but I've seen bosses that do. And, it's just kind of an icky feeling, I guess.
I think that ickiness is just always a part of what's going on, and that accounts for, I think, a lot of the names. A lot of these coinages are just brilliant in the way that they sound good, and they're very vivid in terms of the images. We really do want to sort of know more about when someone is doing this, what their purpose is, and we give it this kind of a violent name in order to sort of make that as clear as possible.
Randy, thanks a lot for calling in. We're talking to Mark Parker, co-author of the new book, Sucking Up, A Brief Consideration of Sycophancy. You can join in with your thoughts, questions, experiences at 800-642-1234. We go next to Mark on the line in Racine. Mark, hi.
Hi. You were talking about weaponizing. It can also be used in comedy. One thing that comes to mind, I don't know if the author had seen it at all, Monty Python had a famous skit about sucking up and yes men.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. The Hollywood producer one, is that it?
Well, there's one where the CEO is sitting around a table and he starts to tell his idea and he only gets out a couple words. Like he says, well, the first part of my idea is I see a tree.
Uh-huh.
And one guy stands up and goes, a tree, I love it.
Brilliant,
what a
genius.
There are a lot of wonderful comic depictions. I mean, Smithers on The Simpsons is just wonderful because he really is a character with one sort of attribute, and yet it gives the writers this chance to sort of just go through all of the many possibilities for someone sucking up. I mean, there's one episode where he thinks the company's going to be sold to Germans, and so he has a book called How to Suck Up in German.
Mark, thanks a lot for that call. I do remember that skit. I may have to go back and watch it now. Thanks for your call at 800-642-1234. Mark, do you have people who come up and volunteer examples to you of sycophancy once they know what you're working on?
Oh, gosh, yes, because I think there is a real pleasure of just sort of getting rid of some of these feelings that we have about suck-ups and sucking up in telling these stories and sharing them with other people. And one of the things that our book tries to do is to think about sucking up through literature primarily, because we kind of wanted to also make the point that literature is a very good way to get out of behavior like this that you really can't know from the outside. Because of the way in which literary works are structured, we get inside the mind of the sycophant. But boy, everybody, I think, everybody has a story.
Back to our callers. Keith is on the line in Green Bay. Keith, hi.
Hi. I think we saw a remarkable example of someone almost demanding sycophancy at one of President Trump's early cabinet meetings, where he went around the room and every one of his cabinet secretaries told how wonderful he was and how grateful they were to be working for him and how great a job. And it was like the biggest suck-up session I've ever seen.
That was remarkable. That was the June 12th cabinet meeting, and there were very few people who didn't go along. It was really striking to see what was happening then. We really didn't, when we started writing this book, we certainly hadn't thought of incidents like that. For the most part, sucking up seems to be everywhere on both sides of the political spectrum, but it was hidden in the past, but not recently. It seems to be very open and much more sort of, the idea is to show it as brazenly as possible and perform it as shamelessly as possible.
Keith, thanks for that call. So, Mark, how do we start to cure ourselves as individuals and maybe as a society of sycophancy?
I think that this the persistence of all of the stories from so far back in so many different ways and so many brilliant configuration shows us that it's not something that we're going to cure. We can sort of, I think, fight against it. And I think one of the first steps is to think about the enablers, because I think The enabler is someone who is in a position of power who requires this, and that is a particularly difficult thing to sort of combat when someone in power is actually requiring it. We can start there by thinking when perhaps we're looking for people to work to hire, are they the kind of person who wants to enable this kind of activity, and to think very hard about what that would do to the workplace if you have someone like that. The other thing is to think about what Plutarch said, is the worst flatterer is what he calls the flatterer within, the person within us who allows us to desire so deeply this kind of blandishment, this kind of sort of gratification. That needs to be eradicated, and with that will come, I think, more mindfulness.
And on a related note, what are you hoping our listeners take away from your brief consideration of sycophancy?
Well, that it's more pervasive than we think, and really worse than we think it is. We often think of it as just a kind of isolated thing, and that it doesn't have any sort of after effects. It's a transaction. But in fact, it really does sort of lower the quality of the world in which we move, in which we have to work with others. If a place that is really sycophantic ceases to be a place where you can really see what someone is saying. You cannot be frank, really, in an environment like that. Everyone will say everything that you say is sort of a way of getting something or getting someone to think about something in a certain way. It becomes a completely manipulative environment, and there is a real cost to this.
We'll leave it there. Mark, thanks a lot for joining us today. I appreciate it.
It was glad to be here.
That's Mark Parker. He's a professor of English at James Madison University. He's co-author with Deborah Parker of the new book we've been talking about. It's called Sucking Up, A Brief Consideration of Sycophancy. Still time for you to share your experiences and your thoughts. You can email us, ideas@WPR.org, tweet us @CentralTimeWPR, or you can post your stories on the Ideas Network Facebook page. You're smart. You're clever. I know you are. So you'll have some great stories to share, I'm sure.